Memories of Mae Whiting Barry. Compiled and edited by Norma Jean Barry. Article. When family classics are told, our mother comes in for her share. Can anyone forget mother's icebox and dresser on the Great White River fishing trip? Or her signature on a check, Mae W. Brinkerhoff, which the bank cleared without question? Can we forget the time she tried on a dress at Penny's, rejected it, then walked out of the store with it under her old dress? We remember the time she got her car confused and drove home in the sheriff's car, complete with two-way radio, red spotlight, and riot gun. We have often wondered what would have happened if she had stepped on the siren. She repeatedly called a man Mr. Sterile, whose name happened to be Mr. Virtue. Mother once sent a telegram to Dean while he was serving in the Navy. It read, "Letter failed to follow, stop. Please follow letter that failed to follow, stop." Despite chronically poor health, Mother had a driving, boundless energy to improve herself and others. She had a fine posture, stood erect, and carried herself in a regal manner. A strong personality, people liked her readily. A magnificent air of self-confidence emanated from her. Few people managed to say no to Mother. We don't know why. Taking command as soon as she entered a room, she did so without resentment on anyone's part. A born leader, it seemed natural when she took over. She could get more work out of people than anyone we ever knew, with the exception of her sister, Aunt Elda. Mother expected a lot from her husband and her children. It seemed easier to succeed at something difficult than to try to explain to her why you couldn't. Her husband, three sons, a son-in-law, and a grandson-in-law took the easy way out and became doctors and dentists. One daughter became an authoress, one an outstanding teacher. Two daughters were accomplished secretaries. All her children and grandchildren were inspired and benefited by knowing her. They accomplished tasks above and beyond the ordinary requirements of life. Their accomplishments were in a great part the fruition of her dreams for them. Thanks to her, the difficult became easy, the impossible only a little harder. Mother made even the dullest task seem like a game. She had the ability of demanding respect without being harsh, yet when she corrected anyone, it was with firmness and always in a low and penetrating voice. Like Aladdin's lamp, Mother's psychological techniques produced magic. It was sail down to the store, or skip over to the pasture and get the cow, or fly down to Grandma's, or let's stitch up a dress. We children sailed, skipped, and flew in good weather and in bad. Our pay was always a great big slice of Mother's sincere reflection of our true worth. Worth millions to us, it formed our habits and became the very fabric of our characters. She strengthened our self-images until by the time we were grown our egos were indestructible. Mother's credit marks are remembered by all of us. These she gave for the extra hard jobs, such as painting outside in the heat of the day, weeding, washing windows, or hunting lost animals. We would face sunstroke, or frostbite, for a chance at one of these marks. We never saw one of Mother's credit marks, nor did she ever explain one to us. Somehow we understood. Just why we worked so hard for something so intangible is hard to explain to someone never having the thrill of earning one. Perhaps she capitalized, subconsciously, upon the deep love and respect that we had for her by giving us the thing we prized most, her honest approval. From the first, she taught us self-confidence and endeavored to make us into self-reliant, positive thinkers. Our father once brought home a new book by Orison Swett Marden entitled, "He Can Who Thinks He Can." She quoted positive passages from this book with repetition and persistence until its messages were integrated into our personalities. Her son, Kay, said of her, "We will always remember one cold winter when this example was set forth. We were an Alpine, living in a log cabin near the one-room school where Mother taught. Dad was back in Chicago going to dental school. Mother's children were Effie, Mary, Kay, and Lee and our cow. One day, Mother made a large batch of delicious homemade bread. We smelled it, admired it, and then went visiting. When we returned, we were shocked to find our place in a shambles. Our old cow had broken in the door, messed up the cabin, and eaten up all our freshly baked bread. Mother met the tragic situation with a smile, then a hearty laugh. Soon our tears were gone and we joined her, laughing until our sides ached. She calmly announced, "First, we will clean up our cabin, then we will fix the door so our cow can never get in again. I will bake a new batch of bread, and you can help me." We never forgot that lesson. It must have been Mother who invented the sandwich method of criticism. She always put a necessary criticism between two compliments. Never known to belittle another person, whether relative, friend, or foe, a person's self-image became enhanced in her presence. Her daughter, Mary, said this of her in the unpleasant task of discipline. Mother took the lead. Yet she remained always our loyal ally. She never told on us when we were bad, and she always told our father when we were good. Mother gave him the idea all those years that he had the best kids in the world. She protected him from the mundane and the lowly. She really put him at the head of his home. I never remember my father changing a diaper. I never saw him open a cupboard door or take a dish from the table. And I am glad to be able to review him in retrospect minus that pasteurization, for he could never have commanded the esteem from us that he did, had he been forced to play the role of bottom changer. I do not recall my father ever speaking an unkind word to any of us. Mother saw to it that he didn't have to. Helen recalls she taught me to do difficult things. One Saturday she was going to be gone all day. I said, "Mother, what can I do today?" She brought a piece of material from the bedroom and said, "Here, make yourself a dress." I had not had real instructions on sewing, but she gave me her confidence. I remember I picked up the scissors and started to cut the material with fear and a trembling feeling. I made myself a dress at 10 years of age. It was something I could actually wear. It had little collars and fit fairly well and, of course, Mother was very proud of it. The next year when I was 11, a lady who lived near our apartment had been making quilts. She used to sit in the evening and make little quilt blocks by hand. I loved to watch her. I asked Mother if she thought I could make a quilt and she said, "Of course you can." I figured out a pattern and Mother got me a lot of scraps. I worked until I had all the pieces together, then she helped put it on the quilting frames. By the time summer was over, I had completely finished it. I still have it in my possession. Mother was a lover of drama. Like Uncle Eddie, she never saw a poor movie. After seeing Duel in the Sunday and Ken Murray's Blackouts, she rushed home to recommend both to the Relief Society. But her flirtation with the theater went further than self-enjoyment. Putting her dynamic personality in gear, Mother was responsible for countless fundraising productions to help build church buildings. Pat O'Brien, William Farnham, Leo Carrillo, she treated celebrities as equals to her own children when it came to coaxing performances from them. Her brand of psychology was something to behold. It had to be seen in action to be believed. A true pioneer in brainwashing, she could almost convince us that we really did like something we hated after all, like rhubarb. Joyce L. recalls that one day her grandma said, "Jack, have some of this rhubarb, it's delicious." "No thanks, Grandma, I can't stand rhubarb." "Can't stand rhubarb? Nonsense, there's nothing better than rhubarb. I cooked it myself." "No thanks, Grandma, I really don't like rhubarb." All the while she was dishing up a nice big dish of pink, stringy rhubarb. "You've never tasted rhubarb the way I cook it. Here, don't say you don't like it until you've tasted this." By this time she had convinced Jack that he didn't know what he was talking about anyway. So he ate rhubarb. And the time, at the reunion, when we were all sitting around the lunch she had hastily prepared. "Here, Herbert, have some stew." "But, May, it's been burned." Now, Herbert, you know you like burnt stew. In remembering our mother, as a dynamic force we are apt to laugh, as we recall the humor and joy which followed in her wake. She not only told such stories on herself, she laughed first and loudest. The honest student of her success in life will note a most important facet of her character. Mother used her powerful personality strictly to do good in this world. Gossip, pettiness, and unkindness were beneath her approach to life. Her love for us was never chilled by our selfishness, nor stifled by our ingratitude. Her love was beautiful and everlasting. She would sacrifice her every convenience for our comfort and pleasure. We really believed she preferred chicken backs until we were grown up enough to try one. Dean summed up our feelings capable in adversity, generous, firm in the gospel, well-read, level-headed, capable of humor, marvelous storyteller. May W. Barrie was all these things to different people. But we children remember her for something else, for the greatest capacity of her love was reserved for her own family. Warmth, tenderness, patience, and concern, chastisement tempered with warm good humor, encouragement, sacrifice, and honor were all part of her great mother love. And this was her greatest role of many she played in this life. She was a mother, and we thank God she was ours.